The National Women's Hockey League is nearing the end of its first season as the first professional women's hockey league and celebrated with its first All-Star game this weekend. But while the fledgling organization is paying women hockey players for the first time ever, the pay remains far below that offered by the men's National Hockey League. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, January 26th. Meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills became the first NFL league with a female assistant coach after promoting Catherine Smith to assistant coach last week. We will examine these recent developments and we will talk about what else is needed to equalize the playing field. It prompted the question, how are we doing with gender equity in sports and what do we need to do it better? And we welcome your thoughts and questions. Are you a fan of any women's sports in particular? Which ones? If not, why not? Do you think it's a problem that women athletes aren't paid as highly as men, or do you think it's because their games aren't watched as widely? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Alana Glass, an attorney and sports journalist and a contributor to Forbes Sports Money. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for joining us. Well, we reached out to you originally because we saw this story about the first season of the National Women's Hockey League, which was created last year as a hockey league that would finally pay women players. The league has attracted some of the best players in the world away from the unpaid Canadian Women's Hockey League, which just had its first All-Star game this weekend. So how is this experiment in paying women hockey players working?
You know, I think that that it's going very well. I know that the players are thrilled to be compensated for their skills and for their talents. You know, it's a unique model in that you know, the players not only play professional hockey, but many of them also have you know, full-time jobs. So you know, they're not yet in a situation where they're playing hockey full-time. You know, many of them are, you know, doing double duty, you know, and are working to, you know, be able to sustain themselves, you know, as well as enjoy a sport they love.
Yeah, you know, I'll have to admit that when I saw the headline in the Washington Post, Women's Professional Hockey Finally Tries a Novel Experiment Paying Its Players, I thought, what in the world? Why would a sport not pay its players?
Right. Well, you know, sometimes it's, you know, it's a situation where, you know, if the league is not in position to have the money, you know, with the National Women's Hockey League, their salary cap is $270,000, you know, per team. The average salary is $15,000. You know, professional sports, you know, it's not like the collegiate sports where you have these, you know, grand athletic departments where you have revenue-generating sports where money can trickle down to non-revenue sports. You know, when you're building a women's professional team, you have to have investors, you have to have sponsors, you have to have those who are willing to come in and put money up front. And, you know, sometimes that's a challenge for women's sports.
Yeah, and why is pay such an important factor in measuring how women's sports are doing?
Well, you know, pay overall is important. If you even take it outside of the context of sports, you know, everyone needs to be able to make a living. You have to be able to sustain yourself. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, just generally, you know, women overall, you know, are making, you know, less money than men. We hear those statistics, you know, over and over again. And so it's important for female athletes, for their talents to be valued and appreciated, just like their male counterparts.
You know, and you mentioned that the average salary for the National Women's Hockey League is about $15,000 annually. Meanwhile, National Hockey League players average as much as $2.4 million. That's a big difference.
Right, that is a big difference. And, you know, it's important also to keep it in context and in perspective. You know, the National Hockey League, it played 50 seasons before their league even expanded from 6 teams to 12 teams. You know, they have owners who, you know, are billionaires and who are coming in with deep pockets. So, you know, what we need is we need for, or the league rather, needs, you know, individuals who have that capital to come in and say, yes, I want to invest in women's sports, invest in female athletes, you know, give the time sport to grow. As we know with any business, any startup, it takes time to grow. I mean, we've even heard Amazon.com was in business for years before it even gained a profit. And so, you know, sports, women's sports needs investors who will come in and be patient, be willing to believe in the athletes and allow it to grow.
Yeah. So overall, what are the barriers to women being paid as well as men throughout professional sports?
You know, as I think probably as I mentioned earlier, the barriers are really having having that startup money, having that startup capital, having you know, also having access to corporate sponsors. You know, luckily with the National Women's Hockey League, in their first season, they've landed a big corporate sponsor with Dunkin' Donuts. So having corporate sponsors, advertisers wanting to come in, eventually, you know, a barrier also is having, you know, television rights. That's always important. So, you know, women's sports, you know, are constantly jumping over these barriers, corporate sponsorships, TV rights, and, you know, getting that money that traditionally is directed towards men's sports and getting it, you know, on their side of the pie.
But there's also that argument against paying women as much as men, and is that women simply aren't pulling in as much money in terms of spectators.
Well, you know, it's hard to pull in spectators when, you know, when you're not given that exposure. So that, you know, that argument, you know, is could be very unfair. If women aren't given the opportunity, women's sports aren't given the opportunity to shine, well, then right, you probably will see fewer spectators. If they're not, if they don't have strong marketing campaigns or, you know, prime opportunities for the sport to be viewed either on television or just in general hours when individuals are looking to watch sports. So, the women's sports need to be given an opportunity to thrive.
Yeah. So do you think that in, you know, I don't know, 50 years that that women will close the gap and women hockey players would be paid close to what men are being paid?
Oh, I believe so. You know, I'm definitely very optimistic. You know, I believe that it will definitely be a challenge, but any startup is a challenge. But I do believe that balance is shifting in the direction of women. I think, you know, male and female fans are seeing how talented they are. Even, you know, Wisconsin's own Hillary Knight is a part of the league. And, you know, I'm sure fans in Wisconsin loved watching her play there and winning an NCAA championship. And we'll want to see her continue to play for years to come.
Yeah. Besides hockey, are there other sports where the pay gap isn't as severe?
Right. That's a good question. I would probably point to tennis, professional tennis. You are seeing now that the women and men who win the singles titles in the Grand Slam tournaments are they do have equal pay. Now, it took a while for that to happen. That wasn't something that happened overnight. And as of 2007, you know, Wimbledon was the last tournament to finally have equal pay for men and women. But, you know, if you look at the numbers, you know, the numbers last year that Serena Williams brought in terms of her earnings, if you look at the numbers, you know, she brought in and salaries and winnings, she brought in $11.6 million. And if you look at Roger Federer, he brought in $9 million in salaries and winnings. So we are seeing that tennis, you know, has sort of been able to overcome that. But there's still some issues there. The women's players do not earn as much as it comes to endorsement deals. So while professional tennis has made strides, and it was because of women like Billie Jean King, who stood up many years ago and rallied her colleagues, and you know, they demanded equality, there is still a little bit to go with that sport, but we are seeing some solid strides there.
We are talking with Alana Glass, an attorney and sports journalist and a contributor to Forbes Sports Money. And we're talking about money in sports and gender equity in sports and what is next for equity in women's sports. And we are welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think it's a problem that most women athletes aren't paid as highly as men? What is the solution as you see it? We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about paying women athletes and what it's going to take to pay more of them more so there's more equality between men and women's sports. And we're welcoming your thoughts, we're welcoming your questions, and wondering, are you a fan of any women's sports? Which ones? And why are you a fan of that particular sport? If not, why not? Do you think it's a problem that women athletes are not paid as highly as men? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking about this in part because women's professional hockey, the National Women's Hockey League, is nearing the end of its first season. And it celebrated with its first All-Star game this weekend. And it began paying its women hockey players for the first time ever. That pay remains far below that offered by the men's National Hockey League, however. Average pay for women hockey players, $15,000. Men can make as much as $2.4 million or even more. So we're talking about why this is, why it's a problem, what can be done about it, and welcoming your thoughts and questions. Our guest is Alana Glass, an attorney and sports journalist and a contributor to Forbes Sports Money. Just before our news break, Alana, we're talking about how that's not necessarily, we don't see that kind of a pay gap in tennis. And of all things, Jeremy on Facebook says, women's tennis is much more entertaining than men's. I'm just wondering if you have a comment on that. Is that one of the reasons why the pay gap isn't as much?
You know, I don't know if that necessarily contributes to the pay gap, you know, women making equal because it's necessarily entertaining. I think what your listener is recognizing that the exposure that the sport has, you know, gained, you're seeing it more and more on television, and, you know, viewers are recognizing that it is entertaining. It is very exciting. The women are gritty and powerful and strong, and you know, and that really contributes to the overall excitement of the sport. So, you know, I think that your listener correctly, you know, pointed out that women's sports is just as exciting as the men's side.
What? So, why is this? And why is it that that we are seeing women's tennis and we're recognizing this? You know, why is this happening in tennis and not in many other sports?
Well, with the situation with tennis, you know, that goes all the way back to the early 70s, where the women at that time were not paid equally. They didn't have their own tour. And Billie Jean King and, you know, several women from that era, they stepped up and they organized, and it took decades for, you know, for us to see the improvement that we're seeing now. And, you know, as a result, generation after generation, you know, as late as Venus Williams was someone who stood up and spoke up about Wimbledon not paying women equally. So we're seeing that in women's tennis primarily because the women players demanded equality, And they also broke off and they started their own tour, which is now the Women's Tennis Association, the WTA. They started their own tour when it wasn't popular. And that also contributed. So, you know, we're seeing that in women's tennis really because of the organizing efforts.
It's funny when you mentioned Billie Jean King and the organizing effort of women in tennis. I was thinking about that very famous Battle of the Sexes, so-called Battle of the Sexes. And I remember Billie Jean King's name, but I don't remember her male opponent's name. Do you?
Right. That's a good question.
We're looking it up. It was Bobby something. But of all things, she was a better tennis player. She defeated him.
Right. It was Billy versus Bobby, and I think it was Bobby Riggs.
That's it. Bobby Riggs. Yes. Anyway, just an aside. We are talking about women's sports and paying women's athletes as much as we pay the male athletes, and we're wondering what you think about this. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Steve in Eagle is with us. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I love the program, and I am a huge fan of women's soccer. But I just don't ever see the equality in pay being there. I love the game, but if you watch them side by side, the women's game is not as fast, and you're never going to have a player like Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, those guys, the name alone, they're known everywhere you go. I mean, maybe a name like Abby Wambach with the women's game is somebody that, you know, most everybody's going to know. But, you know, in terms of, I mean, just pure gamesmanship and all the ability to score goals and do the things that they do, I don't think it's ever going to be there with the women's game. I mean, I do love it, but that's, yeah.
Yeah, well, so what do you say to that, Alana?
Well, you know, I do say that that is a point of view, and thank you for calling in, you know, and sharing your thought, Steve. You know, that's a point of view that women in sports are consistently, you know, trying to battle and trying to overcome. You know, can any of us look into a crystal ball and know whether or not a female athlete will ever rise to the level of, you know, Ronaldo and some of these other well-known global names? You know, we don't know. But the point is we have to give women an opportunity to shine and give them a stage, give them a platform to be able to show their skills and talents. You know, we saw, you know, this past season, Fox Sports 1 took a huge gamble, if you will, on broadcasting the World Cup, and they found that their numbers were off the charts. So, you know, we need to be able to give women an opportunity, give them the stage, give them the spotlight, and allow their skills and talents to shine. Now, in terms of international soccer, you know, gosh, that's a whole nother show in and of itself. You know, the United States, luckily, is a federation that pays its women, you know, six-figure salaries, and they are allowed to train very hard and get first-class facilities, you know, for the most part. But there are other nations where their whole federation, their budget, is equivalent to what one U.S. women's soccer player made last year. So in order for women's soccer globally to advance, you know, we will need all countries, all federations to be on board. So soccer is you know, it's going to be a global, you know, it's a global issue. So but thank you for sharing that, Steve.
And Steve has dropped off, or I'd go back to him a little bit. I'm thinking about almost that women's soccer seems even more, I don't know. I'm thinking of the woman who, after winning, this was not the most recent championship that the American women's team won. It was another one where the woman famously ripped off her shirt. Do you remember that?
Right. That was 1999, and that was Brandi Chastain, yes.
Yeah, and from what I understand, it was, you know, I mean, it was exciting, and everybody was watching, and all sorts of girls got involved in soccer because they wanted to, you know, they saw that.
Exactly. We did. We saw this explosion. We saw, you know, there are girls, for example, you know, Sydney LaRue, who is currently on the U.S. Women's National Team, who has said publicly, I was watching TV, and I lived in Canada. You know, she had, you know, a parent who was Canadian and American, which is why she's, you know, playing in the U.S. But, you know, she has said, in 1999, I watched the women's national team win the World Cup, and that's when I decided I wanted to join this team and be a champion. So we are seeing, we saw that in 1999, and I'll bet there were young girls who this year, in 2015, saw Carly Lloyd score three goals, a hat trick, within the first 13 minutes of the game. And that was the second time that it ever happened in a World Cup final, men or women. And there are girls now who saw that, and they are aspiring to be the next Carly Lloyd.
Yeah. So, while I'm glad that Steve brought it up, because when we were preparing this show, we're looking at different stories of inequity in sports and pay, and the U.S. women's soccer team won the Women's World Cup, but they are paid less than a quarter of what the U.S. men's team was paid for being knocked out of round 16. So, you know, Steve might say they're not as exciting, but they certainly advanced farther than the men's team.
They did. They advanced farther than the men's team. You know, there are some people who may argue that they prefer watching the U.S. national women's team over the men's team. They win. You know, you watch those games, and you know you're going to watch a winner. They've won three World Cups. Their earnings for the tournament were definitely, you know, it was unproportioned to the earnings from 2014. And, you know, again, that goes back. It's not necessarily the U.S. Soccer Federation making that decision. That goes to FIFA. And, again, that's, you know, a whole international level, international decision. So, you know, we need for the sports to grow in the United States, but we also need growth globally and internationally.
You know, and again, well, one more question about soccer, and then we can move on to some other things. But Steve was saying, hey, you know, it's not as fast, and it, you know, it's just not as exciting, and that reminded me that women are soccer players are protesting that they more often than not have to play on AstroTurf, and doesn't that make a difference?
You're right. AstroTurf, that does make a difference. That was one of the arguments surrounding the 2015 World Cup, you know, the speed of the ball on the field, just in general, the wear and tear it has on your body. You know, it's one thing when you are sliding on grass versus sliding on turf. So, you know, conditions also play a major point. You know, in a World Cup, we've never seen men play on turf. And even when the U.S. men's national team, you know, travels and it has its friendly matches, if they're in a stadium that has turf, grass is brought in and put on top of it. So, you know, playing conditions also make a point, play a factor as well.
We are talking about gender equity in sports and paying women athletes as much as we pay men athletes. We're wondering why there is in most sports such a gap and wondering what you think. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest has written about this issue. She is Alana Glass, an attorney and sports journalist and contributor to Forbes Sports Money. And our next caller is Joe in Galesville. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for the interesting show. I just wanted to say I was watching the Maria Sharapova and Serena Williams match last night, and Serena destroyed her pretty much for 11 years in a row. But anyway, I do find some women's sports to be be more interesting to watch than men's sports. Tennis is one. I think figure skating is another. And I would be surprised if women figure skaters who enter the professional ranks, you know, and go on these tours wouldn't make more money or at least similar money to the men, because I think they're very popular. I have a stepdaughter who plays soccer and also figure skates. And I would say that it's difficult to listen to people complaining about getting paid to do things when the amount of money that we pay to let them practice and they have ice time is absurd. But I do think that the driver for the huge disparity is primarily due to TV revenue. Like for the sports that are really popular on television, there's just going to be a huge disparity until a sport reaches that pinnacle where they're getting significant TV revenue, because that's the driver to massive revenues for the owners and massive salaries for the players.
All right, thanks, Joe. A couple of different things. First, Alana, what can you tell us about figure skating? Whether there's a pay gap there?
You know, that's a good question. Figure skating, you know, they have the amateur level. They have, the World Championships is coming up. It will be in Boston this year. In terms of pay, I believe with figure skating, it really boils down to, some of those post-competition tours that we see. And I think that, those tours, it's really driven by sponsors, promoters. I would gather that the caller, is correct that the, more popular skaters more than likely will be compensated more. But in terms of figure skating, is there kind of a quote-unquote professional league, as we see with, our ball and bat sports? That's not something that exists.
Yeah, and so he just says that the disparity in pay is due to TV revenue, and is that the case?
No, that's a good point. That's a good point that Joe made. TV revenue is a very big driver. We are seeing right now that the NFL, even with all of its challenges relating to concussions and injuries, the TV revenue, the TV rights surrounding football, is significant. It's kind of the number one sport here in the United States, and it helps. It helps having TV revenue. Now, we do see that the WNBA has a deal with ESPN. So, their games are broadcasted on the network, and the network is paying the league for the rights to air those games. Now, does it match the NBA or the NFL? At this point, it does not. So when we can get to that point, as your caller mentioned, that definitely will help with the growth and longevity of women's sports.
We are talking about women's sports and improving women's sports. What's next for equity when it comes to women's sports? Our conversation prompted by the National Women's Hockey League paying its players for the first time. And we are wondering what you think, what questions you have. When we come back, we're going to talk about another story in the news. The Buffalo Bills became the first NFL league with a female coach. We just learned of this last week. We'll talk about the significance of that and welcome your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And we wonder if you are a fan of women's sports and which ones, and if not, why not? And wondering if you think it is a problem that women athletes are not paid as highly as men in most cases. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are discussing gender equity in sports, and we are welcoming your questions and your observations, wondering if you are a fan of women's sports, wondering if you think it's a problem that women athletes, in most cases, are not paid as highly as men. What do you think it will take to bridge the pay gap in athletics? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Alana Glass, an attorney and sports journalist and a contributor to Forbes Sports Money. I wanted to talk with you, Alana, about this news story. Just last week, the NFL's Buffalo Bills hired the NFL's first female assistant coach, Catherine Smith. Talk about the significance of that.
Yes, well, we can call her Coach Smith now. You know, it's wonderful to see someone like Catherine Smith, you know, have a goal and achieve it. You know, for all of us, it seems like she came out of nowhere. But if you actually look at her bio, you can see that she has been working season after season to get this opportunity. She has spent 12 seasons in the NFL, starting with internships. She was on Coach Rex Ryan's staff for 7 years. So this is someone who paid significant dues to get this opportunity. So it's wonderful to see a woman excel, especially in the NFL, in a male-dominated sport. And it's you know, it's wonderful to see that the NFL is looking to open its doors to unique perspectives, you know, unique leadership qualities that women have to offer.
Yeah. Will this the hiring of Catherine Smith will that have any impact in growing fandom or support for women's sports?
You know, that's a good question. I think what it will probably do, and what we have seen, especially, you know, last season with Becky Hammon, who's now on the bench in the NBA, you know, those of us who followed women's sports, we knew that she was an awesome WNBA player, but there might have been others who had not followed the WNBA, but when they saw, wow, okay, Coach Popovich hired, you know, Becky Hammon, and she played in the WNBA, well, let me check out the WNBA. Let me see, you know, what those women have to offer. So I think, you know, that's an example where the WNBA, you know, gained a lot of attention because of the success of one of its former players who received an opportunity to coach in the NBA.
Yeah. So one of the issues you did raise with my producer is the lack of women in leadership positions in sports as a whole. How do we get those leaders?
You know, those leaders are going to, you know, come, you know, in a couple of ways. You know, one, we have seen statistically that women who have a background playing sports at the high school or the collegiate level, we are finding more and more that women who have played, you know, organized sports are going up the pipeline and becoming members of the C-suite, meaning CEOs and CFOs and CMOs. So to gain more leadership in sports, we actually should be encouraging our girls to play sports. There's a lot to be learned when you're playing in a team sport, and those leadership skills will translate to the rest of their lives. So we do need to continue to encourage girls to play sports. Also, to get more women in leadership roles, you know, women actually should not stand in their own way. You know, I heard recently that the current executive director of the NBA Players Association, who was recently hired, and she mentioned that there were hundreds of applications for that position, and there were only a handful of women who applied for that position. So we also need for women to be brave and be bold and to take chances and jump in and apply for some of these leadership openings.
Yeah. Do you think female leadership in men's sports, getting more female leadership in men's sports, has the same kind of urgency as other kinds of equity?
That's a good question. You know, I think female leadership in men's sports, you know, I think that it does have a sense of urgency, in that I think if we can begin to change the conversation in the heavily male-dominated sports, I think we will see the conversation change and grow in the women's side. So, having just this division of, okay, the men are over here, the men play here, and the men lead over here, and the women play over here, and the women lead over here, that won't create any unity. So I think it will make a difference by having more female leaders in male-dominated arenas.
Mary on Facebook says, earning opportunities versus giving opportunities is what we should be talking about. Instead of comparing women's hockey to men's, let's really compare it to what it is, a startup business looking to earn an audience slash customer. The NHL has always been a marginal professional league, at least on television, and soccer was a non-entity just a decade ago. But both sports have earned what they have by creating a product that is interesting and desirable to the market that they want to reach. What's your response to that?
Well, that's a good point. It is important to earn a fan base. And, you know, I don't think that that's what we're saying this morning, is that, and no female athlete wants to be just handed something. So, of course, female athletes in women's sports want to earn their fans and want to earn everything that in terms of dollars and salaries. You know, of course they want to earn that. But what we need to do is we need to make sure that we are not putting any barriers in front of them. Barriers like not giving them, grass to play on. You know, we want to make sure that we're not creating any unequal barriers to their participation. So that's what's important. Yes, earning, absolutely. But let's not create any barriers. Let's not have any gender discrimination attitudes that will keep, women from earning, what they deserve.
You are a former manager of the University of Minnesota's women's basketball team. From that experience and your other research, what do you know about how well colleges are setting up women to succeed in professional sports?
Right, that's a good question. Yes, I did start off across the border in Minnesota as a student manager. And, I learned in that situation how important Title IX is to the success of women's sports. For those that don't know, Title IX, is basically law that says, in a setting where an institution is receiving federal funding, that institution cannot treat men and women differently. So as a result, educational institutions like the University of Minnesota, they had to have the women's basketball team and the men's basketball team, had to be, equal down the line. They had, we saw that the practice facilities were top-notch for the men and for the women. We saw that travel was top-notch for the women and for the men. And, that's one thing that I really appreciated when I was at the collegiate level, is I saw how women's sports and men's sports were treated equally. And unfortunately, that doesn't exist in professional sports. So, we're seeing women, for example, as we spoke earlier about the National Women's Hockey League, when they were playing in college, they were flying chartered, on chartered planes, and they had training tables, and they had top-notch equipment. And, now in this new league, they're riding on the bus. And, yes, the equipment is provided by the league, but there's a big difference between the college level and the professional level. So it's important to note that Title IX has really had a huge impact on the success of women's sports.
Is there any way we can put Title IX to professional sports? I guess not.
You know, because it's a law, because it's, you know, I don't necessarily know if it's anything that we can mandate, but it's a model. It's a model that we know that works. It's a model that we know has, but for Title IX, we would not have seen the 1999 Women's World Cup. You know, those the women who played on that team, you know, they call themselves, you know, Title IX babies. You know, they were born right around when Title IX was enacted, and they were given scholarships to play in college and grow and develop their talent. So will we see, you know, anything necessarily mandated? Probably not. But what if what we could do is we could look at that and try to find some way to replicate that model.
Yeah. We have just less than a minute. What can ordinary people do to support women's sports?
Okay, a couple things. Join the conversation. Everyone is on social media these days. Take a minute. Go to your smartphone. Follow the WNBA. Follow the National Women's Hockey League on social media. You know, people are saying, well, you know, I don't hear about it. I don't know when they play. Be an informed fan. Take the time to join the conversation. And also take the time to support women athletes. Go to games. Support young girls and women who are playing sports.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Alana Glass, an attorney and sports journalist and contributor to Forbes Sports Money. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Nyasia Ellison for on-air production with help from Cheryl Gasser. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. Next, we will talk about how changing demographics in America may be affecting voter attitudes as we approach the first primaries for the 2016 presidential race. That's coming up in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.